10 years ago, I was a struggling playwright, writing bad play after bad play, until I finally got it right. And that play was called Griot, He Who Speaks the Sweet Word. It was a collection of African-American characters, some recognizable, some unknown, but all struggling to find their way. And that play was first performed here in Baltimore, on the East Coast of America. And while Baltimore is not known as a bastion of artistic creation, it's played a vital role for many black performers, including a modern-day black revolutionary.
The person I'm going to talk about next, Brother Tupac Shakur.
Aren't they wondering why death rates are going up and suicide is going up? More kids are being handed crack than they're being handed diplomas. I think that rich people should live like poor people and poor people should live like rich people, and it should change every week. And we'll have the best rounded people. And that's how society is built. The upper class run it while we talk about it.
I'm Al Letson for the BBC World Service. And over the next half hour, I'll be exploring the life of Tupac Amaru Shakur, poet, rapper, revolutionary. He was born into struggle. A fight for young black America, it was a battle that ended in his death in 1996 at age 26.
I think more than perhaps any other hip-hop artist, the depth of the emotion that people feel for Tupac is really breathtaking. He was not just an MC, but he was a poet. He was attentive to the interior life. He talked about anguish and confusion and frustration and fear and loss, but also love.
Tupac has become another archetypal figure in the pantheon of African-American folk heroes.
Whatever you want to see with Tupac, you will see with Tupac. He's complicated. That's why he's still interesting, because if he was simple, you could be like, well, I could explain it to him in two sentences.
Tupac is the quintessential falling star that only lit the night for a brief period of time, but burned like a supernova. In just 5 short years, he released 6 albums, acted in 6 movies, wrote hundreds of poems and lyrics, and sold records in the tens of millions, and continues to do so. And to me, like many people, Tupac was an enigma. I loved his thought-provoking prose, his swagger, but sometimes his street influences turned me off. I mean, from a distance, you could never tell what Tupac you were going to get, the thoughtful poet or the thug life gangster. Tupac spoke for poor people all over the world, was sought by the police several times, including a jail stint for one, and at the height of his fame, received letters from the likes of Jim Carrey, Mickey Rourke, and Tony Danza.
Now, I'm a note writer. I like to write notes to people, because you know why? When you Tony Danza, they write you back. Dear two, dear Pac, dear Tupac. I don't know, you know, there was a moment. So I wrote, dear Tupac, you know, I said, you know, I know in the business you're in, you can't be a goody two shoes, but considering where you find yourself, I wouldn't even mind if he was enjoying himself, but he's in jail with 5 bullet holes. Maybe there's another way to approach this.
Soon, Tupac will be awarded a star on Hollywood's Walk of Fame in California, the place that made him a star, and the same place that almost 20 years ago there were demands for his music to be pulled off the shelves. In this, Tupac was like a living juxtaposition. He was the sparks that fly from grinding the acceptable and the improper together, and that spark lit a flame that is yet to go out. Journalist and Tupac author Jeff Weiss.
The thing that's really interesting to me about Tupac is how much he represented this rootless Western heroic frontier myth that's, you know, so prevalent in American history.
Let me welcome everybody to the Wild Wild West, a state that's untouchable like Elliot Ness. The track hits your eardrum like a slug.
The guy's born in New York City. When his mom was pregnant, she was in jail for a plot, a conspiracy to blow up several landmarks across New York. You know, she's a Black Panther. His godfather was Geronimo Pratt. So here's this guy before he's even born. This rebellion was in him.
The child of a Black Panther, instilled with revolutionary ideas, Tupac was nurtured in an environment to become a rebel rouser. And why wouldn't he? I mean, everything he'd seen in his young life backed up his parents' worldview, Black America, victimized, disrespected, exploited. And yet, there was power in protests, fighting the powers that be by any means necessary. These were the thoughts that seeded in Tupac's mind at an early age. Unsurprisingly, at 10 years old, when asked what he wanted to be, he answered, a revolutionary.
When you're born, usually you're born to a dynasty or an empire, right? There's none of that in the outer city. I call it the outer city because we left out. It's no nothing. We don't get any family heirlooms, the family crest, all that stuff that you would think is so important was meaningless.
Here's to you who volunteer your precious lives to give while we here in the ghetto are struggling to live.
The Black Panther Party was essentially public enemy number one from the perspective of the United States government. Tupac was conceived in the midst of that. I'm Dr. James Braxton Peterson. I'm the director of Africana Studies at Lehigh University. His mom struggled quite a bit because of the dissolution of the Black Panther Party, and he grows up in poverty. And so he got a really good sense of what poor urban living was like.
Like, the only thing we can really leave behind is culture, is music, and dignity and determination. That's what we had. I feel as though I'm cheated because instead of me fulfilling my prophecy, I have to start one. Instead of me, you know, doing a good job and carrying on the empire, I have to build one.
Professor Amani Perry from Princeton University.
And not only is the movement gone, but the whole direction of the country has gone in a different way. And he's grappling with these issues that he's been reared to think are really important.
The I Am, Tupac Shakur, I have to be a reminder. Can't chill out, still on. It's on just like it was on when you was young. So how come now that I'm 20 years old, everybody's telling me to calm down? You know, don't curse, go to school, go to college. You know, we had colleges for a while now. You know what I'm saying? And it gets me irked.
In 1985, Tupac moved here with his mother and sister from the Bronx. He called himself MC New York. And this is a time before he became the Tupac that most people know. It was a time when he was searching for his voice, and he found it here at the Baltimore School of the Arts.
There he is. I'm good, man.
Tupac enrolled as an actor, a program run by Donald Hicken. Now, several years back, Donald and I worked on a play together, and the school's new theater, where that play was performed, is now dedicated to Tupac's memory.
Wow. I had no idea.
So it's now the Tupac Amara Shakur Theater, dedicated by Jada Pinkett Smith.
Wow.
Yeah. Come on in, we'll take a look. We can go to my office, yeah, but...
Waiting for a train.
I was away doing a show when he auditioned, so I was introduced to him the first day of class. We sat in a circle, and the kids went around the circle, and they said, you know, who they are. They said their name, and then when it got to his turn, he said, my name is Tupac Shakur, and some of the kids in the circle snickered a little bit because it was an unusual name. And he stood up, and he said, in a way that made everyone quiet, I want you to understand, I respect my name. My name is important to me, and I won't have it laughed at. And boy, that was the end of that conversation.
And how old was he then?
15. Yeah, 15 years old.
Did you know that there was something special about this kid?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there was a level of commitment to his own voice. You know, he always said to me years later that this was the place where he defined himself as an artist, where he found himself as an artist. I mean, you know, one of the things he said in that initial circle was that he was named for Tupac Amaru, who, you know, was a Peruvian revolutionary, and he was proud of that, you know. And he saw very clearly the community. You know, he lived in a very poor part of town, and he saw that not as a kid who felt unlucky. He saw that as a kid who was disenfranchised.
What's your best Christmas memory?
When I thought we didn't get any gifts for Christmas, I was in Baltimore.
It was a knock on the door. My sister's principal from her school came, and they had like this charity, whatever, where they give like the turkey to the poor family on the block. We was the poor family. That's when I used to feel the sorriest for my mother. It's because there was no man there, you know? There wasn't even regular dinner, let alone Christmas dinner, you know? And she had to, like, explain to us how, like, I mean, it's so hard to sell that all we need is each other's speech. You know, and she's telling us that as our stomachs go.
When I was young, me and my mama had beef, 17 years old, kicked out on the streets. Though back at the time, I never thought I'd see.
In Baltimore, Tupac starred in several theater productions and began rapping with friends like Jada Pinkett, who would go on to become an actress and marry Will Smith. With his father gone, Tupac wrote about this time in his life in a way that is uncharacteristic of rappers. He wrote from a place of complete vulnerability. Dear Mama is a heartbreaking tribute to his mother, who battled her own demons of addiction during Tupac's youth. And though their relationship at times was fractured, in the song, Tupac finds forgiveness and love for his mother.
Running from the police, that's right. Mama catch me, put a whoop into my backside. And even as a crack fiend, Mama, you always was the black queen. Mama, I finally understand, for a woman it ain't easy trying to raise a man. You always was committed, a poor single mother on welfare. Tell me how you did it, there's no way I can pay you back. But the plan is to show you that I understand. You all appreciate it.
Well, she was an addict, you know, at that time, and he had to be the man. As much as this place, as much as BSA meant to him, he knew he had to walk away. He knew he had to go. But his mom, you know, who was struggling, had got a job in Oakland, and they had to move. And he came in, and he came into my office, and he said, I got to go. And he started to cry. And he said, I got to be there for my sister. I got to be there for my mother. And he knew he had to go, and he went to Oakland. So he never graduated from here, but he came back every year.
The evolution of Tupac from the kid you knew to who most of the world thinks about today. Can you kind of talk me through that?
Well, you know, what's funny is that every time I saw him, he came back to the kid that I knew. You know, he was on his way back here when he got killed in Vegas, because I was always pushing him to go back to acting. Not because I didn't respect him as a rapper and in that world, but because that world is really insane. You know, he'd come in with four or five guys, and they'd all be perched around on the windowsills and stuff, and they're all looking real tough. And I took him by the lapels. Meanwhile, the guys are coming off the windowsills, you know. But I had him by the lapels, and I said, you are an actor. You're a great actor. And that was a hard thing for him, because I think he knew that the whole lifestyle was a very important part of his authenticity as a poet. His own instincts would have been happy-go-lucky guy. He was a very compassionate person, very empathetic and caring person. And I think ultimately he had to live it to write it. And it ultimately was his undoing, I think.
The distinction between real and performance became blurred. Tupac left Baltimore, moved with his mother and sister to Marin County in California. His mom was addicted to crack, and Tupac struggled. And then he stumbles across a young white woman named Lila Steinberg, who became his first manager and mentor.
I would always say to everyone around me, I wanted to find an artist to work with that spoke to issues in a way that hadn't been done before. And I'd say, from that day, we were inseparable for a few years. He just kind of consumed my world, and I wanted to make it my mission to make him matter to everybody.
When you met him, kind of where was he artistically?
Where he was emotionally is what I remember. He was desperate because of his circumstance at home. He actually believed it was tangible to make a difference, and that he could really speak to the masses and the lost ones. And you can see it in the way that it unfolded from each record. Each
record is really different.
Very different, and all so much him. And reflective also of his growth and his anger and his, at times, defeat. He didn't get to grow slowly into his process. Everything was rushed. Everything was lightning speed for him. So within one record, he really got how to put a record together, and then he rushed to get a lifetime of work out of him in a few years. And that's why I didn't always agree with his choices.
When I think about it, it drives me a little crazy, because I feel like he could have been like what Malcolm X was.
Well, we wanted Tupac to be the solution, but he was really the diagnosis.
A new stage of Tupac's life begins.
Tupac, go ahead and rock
now
this.
Now I clown around when I hang around with the underground. Girls used to frown, say I'm down when I come around.
He gets a record deal, records the acclaimed debut album, Tupacalypse Now, and lands a role in a little movie called Juice.
Sip the juice, I got enough to go around, and the thought takes place uptown. I grew up on a sidewalk while on street talk, and then taught the whole New York. I go to Queens for Queens to get the food from Brooklyn. Make money in my
He's cast as Bishop, the antagonist who gets enticed by the power of a gun, and in his quest for respect, kills his friends.
Crazy, man. You know what? When you said that last time, I was kind of tripping, right? But now, you're right. I am crazy.
Nothing is bigger than the movies and television, and he transcended hip-hop almost immediately. There's some kind of magic that goes on when you see the big screen where you almost believe that the actor is the one who came up with those lines. He was able to kind of sell that to people. So, you know, yeah, people saw him as Bishop.
In hip-hop, you are expected to live every aspect of the music.
There were very few of us who grew up in the inner city that had seen the depiction of a character as complex as Tupac plays as Bishop in Juice.
The artistic revolutionary, Thug Life tattooed across his chest, he starts to live the life of the characters he sketches out in rhyme. But with success, his life starts to spiral.
That one of the greatest threats to American family values is the way our popular culture treats them.
A police officer is killed by a man who said he'd been listening to Tupac's music. The then vice president, Dan Quayle, tells a gathered audience that Tupac's music has no place in our society.
A line has been crossed. It's crossed every time sexual violence is given a catchy tune.
Moral panic swarmed around gangster rap. He was involved in the fatal shooting in Marin City, and he's charged with shooting at two off-duty Atlanta policemen. All of this against the background of simmering discontent in Los Angeles.
The impact of deindustrialization, the loss of employment, mass incarceration swoops in, right? All of the hopes of the political movements of the 60s and 70s are dashed.
Don't go near this area, South Central Los Angeles at Florence and Normandy.
In L.A., a jury acquitted LAPD officers accused of beating Rodney King, and the city burst into flames. Open rebellion.
It was very close to a revolution. Two nights of absolute anarchy.
An ongoing situation, you best advise to stay clear.
University professor John Sutherland was teaching in Los Angeles in 1992.
What can only be called African American rage.
Seeing rocks and I presume bottles and various things thrown at cars, school buses, RTD buses.
The sight of that black man, Rodney King, being beaten.
Cars in this intersection, okay, where one woman dragged from her car and ended up on the street.
They claim that I'm violent just because I refuse to be silent. These hypocrites are having fits because I'm not buying it, defying it. Envious because I will be.
And it's against that context that Tupac Shakur's anger was funneled into art.
There's a sense of devastation, and I think particularly in California, in the shadow of Hollywood, in the shadow of affluence, right? And he captures that.
People think of Tupac as being bifurcated, like he's kind of good and evil embodied in one.
You know, I could imagine how many people tested him.
But Tupac was obviously not one to back down. Think about what are the greatest challenges that he faced, and I think it was really the rape case.
Shakur and another man were accused of sexually assaulting and sodomizing a 21-year-old woman.
He felt he could have prevented that from happening.
Whilst on trial for charges of sexual abuse, he's shot 5 times, survives, then sent to jail. He gets wrapped up in one of the biggest arguments in hip-hop history.
I'm sure that there was some kind of horrible stuff that was happening to him in jail. So you have a guy who's simmering, you know, his Me Against the World comes out, it's number one, he's sitting in jail.
He accuses another rapper, his former friend, Biggie Smalls, and producer Sean Puffy Combs of orchestrating the attack on him.
Trust nobody. My closest friends did me in. My homies, people who I done took care of their whole family, turned on me.
His prison stint crushed his soul, and his enemies just increased. His time seemed short, death looking over his shoulder.
But Tupac came out of jail, and he was, like, you know, a maniac, you know? He was, like, writing, like, recorded all night, and every day would record and record and record and record. And
we only got 2 weeks to do this whole album. Complete it. Mix it down and everything. We don't have time or the luxury to spend all this time doing one song. We don't have it.
He travels to Las Vegas to see a Mike Tyson fight. In Las Vegas, CCTV captures Tupac and others fighting with an L.A. gang member.
The hair trigger temper that he had. If you beat up a Crip, there's going to be repercussions.
Hours later, 12 shots are fired at his car. 4 strike Shakur.
No, don't make no noise. Every brother in here, please take your hat off. At 7:03 p.m. New York time, 4:03 p.m. Las Vegas time, Tupac Shakur passed away, y'all. Can we have a moment of silence for the memory of one of the greatest rappers that will ever live, Tupac Shakur?
How long will they mourn him? Yeah.
Nearly 20 years on, and Tupac's songs continue to have a role in people's lives. This is G, a Turkish Cypriot barber from North London.
A man like that would never be replaced. To me, he's a steel rod in our system. It won't be forgotten, it'll never be forgotten. Why did his mum cremate him straight away? Why wasn't he wearing a vest at Mike Tyson's fight in Las Vegas? To me, he's not gone. I know he's not gone. He's still there.
The amount of music that he recorded, the prophetic nature of some of the content of that music. When you think about the Tupac hologram from 2012 at the Coachella concert and how eerie that was for folk. There were young people who were still writing letters even after Tupac passed away. All of the sort of conspiratorial inclinations that could possibly attach to an artistic figure have attached to Tupac. And that, I think that invites a certain kind of reverence as well.
Set against new social backgrounds, his music has been remixed, released, and repurposed.
Tupac has become another archetypal figure in the pantheon of African American folk heroes. It's just me against the world. A lot of black folk heroes are both outlaws and they're intrinsically good. They embody both aspects. And I think that is what made him heroic among some people. Can you picture my prophecy? Stress in the city,
the cops on top of me. The project is full of bullets, the bodies is dropping, they ain't no stopping me. And this is the power of Tupac. Rather, it's the power of all great artists. The ability to reach beyond all the things that separate us, race, class, religion, and find a place of mutual understanding. Unwrapping the enigma that is Tupac is no different than the questions we have of ourselves.
Tupac's lyrics were probably more insightful, in my opinion, with all apologies to the Biggie fans.
Tupac's spirit has reached into the most surprising places.
Peak of death row music is kind of when, you know, I was in college and then law school, so.
Not too long ago, Senator Marco Rubio, a Republican politician from Florida, brought up Tupac at a press conference.
You know, in some ways, rappers are like reporters, especially in that era in the 90s. People kind of picked up on it the wrong way. They thought that these were folks that were condoning a certain lifestyle. Maybe there was some of that in there. But mostly they were reporters. So the 90s, which is when this was really taking off, was a time when this was really pronounced.
What Tupac would have made of Marco Rubio's policies, well, that's hard to know. But knowing he's still a part of the conversation, I think that would have made him happy.
Hey, man, seriously.
Let's see, man. Do me a favor, all right?
What?
If Bishop calls up, he comes by. Tell him I ain't here.
Why? Does he like Bishop anymore?
Why you ask so many questions, man?
His music is still the most requested on UK prison radio. The list of hip-hop artists who reference Tupac continues to grow. Eminem, YG, 50 Cent, and the new generation, like Bishop Nehru, who took his name from Tupac's debut film, Juice.
Remember how I came about him? But it's been a long time. You know, and I feel like everybody should take their music passionately. And he, you know, showed it in a very, he wasn't afraid to show it. I could just feel Tupac, where he's coming from sometimes. And I could feel like he's there with me and he's talking to me. And as a kid, that's something that you need sometimes.
Like, here's the thing, though. Like, literally, I could tell you four Pac songs. Like, he's got four classics for me. California Love, Dear Mama.
Tupac got so many verses, though. This is the thing. Tupac got so many verses.
So here's the thing I will argue with you on. This is what I will argue with you on. Is that Tupac had a lot of verses, right? Mm-hmm. But if you took all of his albums and took the good songs out of those albums, you'd have maybe one ridiculous classic. Biggie Smalls, every single album, classic.
I gotta disagree with you. All Eyes on Me is an incredible. People sleep on that album so much.
It's a good album.
It's an incredible album.
I wouldn't say
hip-hop.
That. I would
That's
say
an
it's
incredible
a good album.
Hip-hop album.
All right.
How do you? You don't like How Do You Want It?
That's good.
What?
It's good.
Oh my goodness. When I was young, me and my mama had beef. 17 years old, kicked out on the streets. Though back at the time, I never thought I'd see a face. Ain't a woman alive that could take my mama's place. Suspended from school, I'm scared to go home. I was a fool with the big boys breaking all the rules.
Tupac Shakur, Hip Hop Immortal, was produced by Bonnie Roundtree and is a Tonic Media production. The